the Buffalo River surges through a bluff canyon at Pruitt Ranger Station after heavy early spring rains. Its signature turquoise waters are crystal clear, and the river teems with life this early spring morning. Taking time away from his office at the federal building in Harrison, Kevin Clark, Chief of Interpretation, Education, and Cultural Resources for Buffalo River National Park Service, sits at a picnic table beneath an old walnut grove and gives us a little mid-19th century history on this place.
The area was, I would say, sparsely populated with subsistence farms. The watershed is a lot bigger than the park. The park only occupies about 9% of the total watershed. But it would have been small farms, a lot of small farms, a mosaic of small farms, particularly in the bottomlands. And then beginning in the early 20th century, the Homestead Act provided for occupation of some of the uplands, which wasn't so good for farming, but it did bring in more people. And they were growing cotton and all kinds of row crops, cattle, mules, pigs. The usual kind of thing, but probably a lot more people per acre than you see today.
Because when the park was established 40 years ago, only three private use zones were allowed in Boxley and Richland Creek valleys along the upper portion of the river. The remaining families were given a 25-year occupancy limit before they had to vacate. But long before any white and African-American settlements on the Ozarks, indigenous people made their living here.
Really, it didn't change a whole lot through prehistory, except with the advent of pottery and the advent of maize cultivation during late prehistory. And so they were up here, they were eating elk, they were eating all the food that the river could provide, anything from little tiny winkles to mussels, certainly white-tailed deer. Oddly enough, even though it's called the Buffalo Fork of the White River, we don't have any buffalo remains from any of our archaeological sites, but we presume that they were here based on the naming of the woodland species of buffalo, which is now extinct. And so really, turkey, white-tailed deer, later corn, those things would have been the staples of the Native Americans. Then there's a gap in our knowledge from around 1400 to 1600. The record goes dark, and then you have the advent of historic tribes, and primarily the Osage Nation. What we call the Osage Nation today was one of the dominant groups in the area, but it was also used probably on a seasonal basis by the Caddo and the Quapaw and some other groups as well.
Kevin Clark has a PhD in anthropology and is an expert on prehistoric archaeology. And prehistoric American Indians found plenty of shelter in this limestone karst-rich region.
Which gives it lots of sinkholes and caves and the bluffs that characterize the Buffalo River. The vegetation is, I guess I would call it a mixed hardwood forest. It's got lots and lots of oak and hickory, bottomlands, cottonwood, sweet gum, sycamore. Uplands, we get some stands of pines. And then one of the features that we feel is particularly important are the glade environments, which are on shallow soil, exposed limestone bedrock, which feature various species of juniper and some very interesting endemic species, both plant and animal, and some prairie relics as well. You can, on the Buffalo, find collared lizards, roadrunners, cactus, things like that. Or in the upper river, there's stands of beech woods that are, should be hundreds of miles north, but they're just left over from the end of the Pleistocene, the Ice Age, as sort of a relic population.
Some of those older growth beech stands, especially on the upper elevations, are magnificent and feel ancient, and were almost lost to massive development in the mid-20th century.
Right after World War II, people are coming back. There's the rural electrification program going on. There's the Army Corps of Engineers is putting people to work, initially with flood control, and that evolved into electrification for rural Arkansas. And so there was a huge impetus to generate hydro by the creation of dams, and many, many dams were built. And so in 1965, the Park Service started looking at the Buffalo River for its intrinsic values. and got in the way of the plans to dam the Buffalo in two locations. And that began the battle for the Buffalo River. And it went back and forth with different legislators, taking a stand for or against the Buffalo National River, the proposed park. And beginning of the Ozark Society, which was probably the lead citizen organization as proponent to the park, which I think they began in 1965. Anyway, back and forth, ultimately with a change of personnel in Washington, the Army Corps plans to dam the Buffalo were put on the back burner, and the plans to create a national park unit, which ultimately became America's first national river, were put in motion. And again, what we have today is the outcome of that almost decade controversy and study and culmination in America's first national river, Buffalo National River.
But imagine what this place would look like had the dams been constructed.
Well, there was two dam locations near present-day Gilbert and Buffalo City, and it would have backed up the Buffalo River from just above the confluence with the Buffalo and the White River at Buffalo City to just barely into Newton County. Most of the impoundment would have been in Marion County and Searcy County, and it would have covered up present-day Tyler Band, Richland Valley. It would have been a big lake.
And this preserved national river, with its unique topography, flora, and fauna, is beyond compare. Buffalo National River provides tons of recreational opportunity, 135 miles of river, 100 miles of maintained hiking and horse trails, and 12 campgrounds, a quarter of them free.
We have three visitor contact stations or major visitor centers at Tyler Bend on Highway 65 north of Marshall. And we have on either end at Buffalo Point, we have a small visitor contact station, and at Pruitt, we have a small visitor contact station. And each district has law enforcement, maintenance, and interpretive staff associated with it.
And more visitors are expected this year, especially in honor of the 40th anniversary of the Buffalo National River, despite a rocky economy.
My division, Interpretation Education, has lost 50% of its seasonal employees. Maintenance has lost over 60% of its seasonal employees. So in the context of struggling with that, our planning for the 40th anniversary has been a little bit late. However, we are planning now to have a major event on Labor Day,
which is a three-day holiday, the weekend of September 3rd. Celebration will be hosted at Tyler Bend Visitor Center. And Keith Jefferson, also a Park Service interpreter for the Buffalo National River, says everyone who comes here needs to get on the river.
I say float. I mean, the bluffs are just magnificent. I mean, the rest of the park is beautiful, but the bluffs in the upper is just like, my goodness, phenomenal.
And seriously, why wait? Early spring is the best time to float. The river's up, bugs are down, fewer people are about, and the views are breathtaking. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.